Akshay, did you always knew what you wanted to do when you passed out from MBA?
I was all over the place. Saurabh, what about you?
Yaar, meko to tab bhi idea nahi tha, aaj bhi idea nahi hai.
Confused about your career choices? Wondering what steps to take next? In this podcast called Beyond Campus, Saurabh Garg, founder of C4E, and Akshay Dutt, founder of Unnati, are on a mission to crack open the career success code for the youth. Wo bachpan mein kehte the na, tum jo chahe ban sakte ho. So, let's turn the dream into reality.
Hi, I'm Anand. I'm the co-founder of Leap.club.
Everything in life is a matter of our choices. Process it for a fraction of a minute and a lot will automatically make sense after that. In this episode of Beyond Campus, Akshay Dutt talks to Anand Sinha, CEO of Leap Club, who revealed what makes him to keep going. Anand also serves as the co-founder of the voluntary group, the Robin Hood Army. His success sutra remains choosing growth over profitability. Adjust your headphones and explore this wonderful entrepreneurial journey of Anand Sinha only on Beyond Campus.
So I was a very lost child, you know, that's how I look back at my childhood. Career-wise and studies-wise and professional, I had absolutely no idea. I still, in some sense, live one day at a time. And so I was a very happy-go-lucky as a kid. And of course, again, very middle-class parents, the focus, family and upbringing, the focus was always on grades and on marks, but I wasn't that good. But I think the good thing was that my parents gave me a lot of freedom from very early on to sort of, you know, choose my own path. And I think that's what helped me a lot. That's what shaped me as an individual. But I ended up taking commerce in class 11th. So that was the first big decision in some sense of my life. Yeah.
Did you have something in mind? You wanted to be a CA? Like, us zamane mein to commerce leke CA ka hi sochte honge log. CA ya MBA?
In fact, I did register for the CA, you know, exams, the level 1 exams, but never ended up giving them. But kuch tha nahi, our thought process. It was just science was, it seemed just too tough. I remember looking at those books, you know, physics, chemistry books in class 11, and they were just too fat and boring. And so I just knew ki that's not for me. Again, arts was something ki us time lagta tha ki koi future nahi hai, kya karoge aage jaake. So again, it was just by default. I guess, you know, that's how it happened for a lot of people and for me too.
Okay. So how did you end up going to Bangalore for your graduation? Like, why didn't you just go into DU?
So I actually spent a year in DU. And this is again, I used to play a lot of football at that time. And in fact, I was playing for the state and all of that was happening. And I wanted to pursue that. I was very interested in pursuing that full time. So, ek saal usko maine kafi kiya, and again, you know, I mentioned that my parents gave me some space and room to do all of these things, which is great. So I did that for a year, and but ended up dropping that year because I was just focusing so much on sports. Unfortunately, I had 2 knee surgeries during that year, and so serious injuries, and that's when, you know, football as an option wasn't there on the table anymore. And maybe since I had dropped out, I had not given exams, and it was just a lot of mess in some sense at that time, but then thankfully, you know, I think my parents decided ki isko yahan se hatao and give him a new sort of place, and that's how I ended up going to Bangalore at Christ College.
So that must have been like pretty transformational, like Delhi boy in Bangalore, the whole culture shock, like you know in Delhi boys and girls don't mix so freely, and you know there are more hang-ups, and Bangalore is like pretty open kind of a culture. So what was that whole experience like for you?
It was crazy. Those 3 years, when I look back, I think they completely transformed me in many good and bad ways. It was a total culture shock, as you said, because, you know, ekdam se a boy who spent all his childhood in Delhi, suddenly in Bangalore, different language, different culture, staying alone. You know, here parents, Indian parents, typically pamper you quite a bit and you don't have to worry about a lot of things. But it was crazy. It's a few things I enjoyed, a few things I didn't enjoy at all. So at the end of 3 years, when I got a chance, I actually just got out of Bangalore.
What did you not enjoy?
I think it was just a slightly, you know, at that age for me to sort of go to a new city, new culture, I don't think I mingled too well with the people there. And that's one of my bigger regrets because, you know, typically college is when you make very strong friends and you have your best years in some sense. But that wasn't the case with me. And so I had a few friends, etc. But overall, I don't think I sort of, Christ also had a very different vibe than DU. I remember you had to wear formals and go and you had to wear a tie. And I used to think, what is happening? You know, why will I wear a tie to college? And I remember I had long hair and on my day one there, the father who was the principal there asked me that this hair whip is not allowed here. And I was like, why? It's college. This is my time to do all of these things.
Okay.
So, thoda sa, you know, main thoda phas gaya beech mein. That's how I look.
Did people see you as a typical Punjabi ladka, like typical North Indian? Rebel attitude and all that.
Bilkul. You know, I had my ears pierced and long hair, as I said. And so, wo, Christ mein toh bilkul bhi fit nahi tha wo.
Achha. Okay. So, but how did those 3 years change you as a person? Like, you know, was there like a boy becoming man kind of transformation?
In some sense, because, you know, I mentioned that I was fairly happy-go-lucky, just taking one day at a time. But I think just being in a new city, managing your finances, a house or, you know, wherever I was living, it just, I think, added a lot of responsibility. And, you know, there was no one saying, okay, this is when you have to study, this is when you have to play. So it, all those decisions, in some sense, I had to take for myself for the first time. And I think that, I think those were the great takeaways for those 3 years, in those 3 years.
So 11, you come back to 2009, you come back to Delhi. Then what did you do next?
No, I actually, you know, it's again a slightly funny story. 2009, I moved to Hyderabad.
Oh, okay.
And because we had a company called DE Shaw, which came on campus.
Yeah, the Jeff Bezos company. I mean, Jeff Bezos started his career there only. No?
Yes. So now it's a pretty massive hedge fund. And so they came on campus right at the start of my third year, final year. And in fact, I remember it was a pretty prestigious, this thing, 5,000-6,000 people. And Christ was a massive college. So, you know, a lot of thousands of students sat for the placements and they ended up selecting 5 and I got selected. So then life took me to Hyderabad then.
And what was the role there?
So I was part of the financial research team. So a lot of traders that used to sit in the US. So in some sense, we were their support team. We used to do a lot of R&D in the companies that the firm was investing in.
Was it like a research and report writing flavor, or was it like more mathematical, analytical flavor? Like, what was the flavor of the role?
So it was more analytical in some sense. You know, you have to study the companies and just sort of prepare some trends and everything in some sense that will help make better investment decisions.
Okay.
So yeah, that's what we were doing.
And then why did you leave that after 2 years?
So I had the best 2 years there, by the way. You know, the fact that I mentioned that I didn't live my college life in Christ, I actually ended up living that in Hyderabad.
Oh, okay.
So you can imagine, we were 25, 30 of us who joined on the same day from all, you know, top, the 10, 15 colleges in India. And so we ended up making great friends there. But those years ke baad also realized that this is not something that was my calling. It was a very, you can imagine, a very corporate formal setup. And I think just given my background, I wasn't used to that and I just wasn't fit. So, 2 years ke baad, I thought, yaar, ab kuch aur try karte hain.
Okay. Then, what next?
So, then I came back to Delhi really without a plan. And I thought, I'll go and figure. And this so happened that a friend of mine saw this opening, Zomato opening. Zomato was looking to hire in their sales team. And by the way, this is early 2011. Kisi ko pata nahi tha Zomato kya hai us time. So I ended up emailing them, like cold emailing them, the team there. I got a response. I went to their office, met Pankaj, Dipinder, and everyone there.
Acha. At that time, the founders were directly involved in it.
Yes. It was a 20-25 member team, so it's very small. So I met them and things worked out. And within 15 days of actually coming back to Delhi, I ended up joining Zomato.
And this was for a sales role?
This was for a sales role, yes.
So, you know, coming from a background of 2 years of a desk job and, you know, like a hardcore desk job, why did you think of taking up sales? And I mean, you know, didn't it seem intimidating because sales means the pressure to meet targets and all that?
So again, the honest answer there is I had no idea what sales was, right? Because no background. Kuch startups us time kuch hota nahi tha. And so no background, but I just went there. I really liked the vibe there. The office used to be at a house in Gurgaon. And I just really liked the vibe and just felt ki this is, you know, this is the place that I can again make friends. Us time utna professionally to main bilkul sochta hi nahi tha. So again, I thought ki this is a place where I can maybe learn and make great friends and have a good time. And that's how it ended up happening.
So you would have taken up any role that they would have given you. Sales was...
Accidental. Yeah, totally.
So how was that experience of transitioning from a desk job to a sales job?
Again, you know, grade three. So I spent two stints at Zomato, and this was my first stint. So it was grade 3 years, right? I actually never ended up going to B school. But I always look back and think those 3 years was my business school in some sense. And again, just to see that transformation, and of course, we all know how Zomato grew, and just to see that transformation, to play my part in that. So wonderful 3 years, so much learning. Again, Zomato was a place where they gave us a lot of opportunity to do multiple things. And so kafi kuch kiya in those 3 years, you know, built a lot of teams, traveled quite a bit. And so great 3 years. Like, I think wherever I am today, it's a lot of base, the foundation was set during those 3 years.
So what was it like in those early years being part of a high growth startup, and, you know, how did it impact your career? Like, I can see that you became the national sales head in a very short time. You know, how did that happen?
So again, I think, see, the thing was that I think some of the things that haven't changed, right? Even after 10 years, if you join an early stage company, even today, if you treat the company like your own company, if you're high on ownership, if you really sort of, you know, forget about work-life balance in some sense and just sort of give it your all and just have a great time and also learn at the same time, then it's a win-win for everyone. And I think that's what happened with me. Again, very lucky to work with, you know, people like Dipinder and Pankaj, because these guys were always, you know, on top of the game. And just spending time with them in the same room and, you know, doing meetings and learning. So it was again, great. And even the people that you work with, Zomato is well known for their culture. And, you know, it's a very close-knit team and which moves very fast. So all of these, I think, important ingredients in some sense got imbibed in me very, very early on. So it was great 3 years.
So then why did you leave after becoming the national sales head?
Yeah, so, you know, growth was pretty good in the first 3 years. Since the company was growing and I was working hard, and maybe, you know, those guys felt that I have potential. So I also grew pretty quickly. And so it was not an easy decision at all. You have great friends, you're growing, the company is growing, all of that. So, but I think now when I look back, I just feel that the fact that I worked so closely with the founders there, I think the whole, that whole dream got this thing in me as well. Yeah, meko bhi apna kuch karna hai. You know, I want to be like them. And I think that's what happened. And at 2014, 15, you know, at that time, the startups in India were just exploding in some sense. And so I got together with a friend of mine who, in fact, has the same story as mine. He was with me in DE Shaw, my flatmate there, and then joined Zomato. And both of us, I think, were in the same boat. And we thought, you know, we were young, we had no responsibilities at that time. And we thought, you know, if not now, then when? So we jumped into building something of our own.
Okay. So what did you decide to build?
So the company was called PressPlay. And kafi unique wo challenge tha. You know, what we were trying to do was ultimately build a content distribution network. And how we started was that people were getting so bored on long distance buses or on trains or on flights. And this is all pre-Jio and pre, you know, free internet. So streaming, etc., wasn't that easy at that time. So we thought that there has to be a better solution. We took so many buses from Bangalore to Hyderabad and traveled so much on buses at that time. And we just thought, yeah, itna, people get so bored and there's nothing to do. So we actually started building these, you know, small servers, if I can call them that. And you could just take out your smart device and you can start streaming content from a local network. So that's how we started. And we started doing that on buses. We started doing that on trains in India. And it started off pretty well. You know, it became pretty popular. And we were at it for almost 4 years. So, yeah.
What was the monetization model?
So monetization model, we used to charge, the first 30 minutes used to be free, the content. And then post that, the user had to pay. But it was completely broken, right? Now, when I look back, again, there were kuch wallet to time hota nahi tha.
Yeah, right.
And wallet, UPI, nothing, right? So basically, we used to send, the user had to send an SMS to a number.
Okay.
And then uske balance se wo, you know, some 10 rupees or whatever that we used to charge, that used to get deducted. And so it was complicated. It wasn't an easy solution, but that's what we tried doing.
That's directly from his prepaid balance.
Prepaid balance, or it will get added to your postpaid bill. And so, yeah, it was a complicated monetization, this thing. Yeah.
But why didn't you go down the route of ads?
We tried that a bit later. In fact, in the last couple of years, when the traffic also grew, see, the first couple of years, we knew that there wasn't any traffic on the platform, right? So we had to work on that. And then later, we were almost doing 300,000, 400,000 users on the platform every month. And that is when we hit sort of, you know, some scale. And we tried to work with a few agencies, introduce this as a new channel in some sense to advertise, and did decently well. In fact, you know, we were working with almost 25, 30 clients at a time. But too much, you know, it was just, it's, ads business is not an easy business. So so I think that also, you know, we were not very keen on sort of doubling down on that.
I mean, you know, it sounds like something which would have done well eventually if you had stuck to it. Because, I mean, you know, this landscape changed. Did you like give up too fast, or were there like personal challenges because of which you gave up and lost interest in it? Or, you know, like what happened? I mean, because it seems like something which, and you had raised funding also. So you had like backers. So, you know, then why walk away from what you built, which seems so promising even today?
So in fact, you know, every time if you go on a Vistara flight or even, you know, some other flights, you actually see the solution now in play. You know, take out your smart device and just stream on your instead of having those screens on those seats. So it is obviously promising. It's still surviving in some sense in a few verticals. But I, you know, looking back, I think 4 years we hustled a lot, right? As you can imagine, we gave up. We were working 7 days a week, you know, 12, 13 hours a day. And I feel that by the end of it, we were also a little burnt out. Business didn't grow at the pace at which we really wanted. Yes, and we had some funding. At our peak, we were almost 70, 80 of us in the team. So it was a pretty big team as well. But I think the business wasn't taking a direction in which we had initially imagined. And pivoting at that time was slightly tough because, all these Netflix and Prime had also come to India and content costs had become very expensive. So there were some sort of industry challenges as well for us. And so we tried a few things. You know, we tried some short form content, which of course now you see it's exploded. So you know, we were one of the first players to, in fact, you know, try that. But I just feel that I think by the end of it, we were number one, burnt out. And I know it seems a little weird for founders to say that, but you know, I have faced that and I understand that at a much deeper level. And also I think, as I said, that the business just didn't take a direction that we wanted it to take. And at the end of 4 years, I think we decided that maybe, you know, it's better to spend our time building something else. And that's what we ended up doing.
And were the investors willing to back you further, or was there some lack of support from the investor side also?
No, investors were actually very supportive. You know, we had Sequoia as the lead institutional investor in some sense. And we had raised a small bridge round, in fact, at that time. And we had some money in the bank. And they were supportive. In fact, let's say if we had pivoted to something completely different, I'm sure that they would not have, you know, they would have backed the team. But at that stage, again, we just felt that it was obviously not an easy decision at all, right? You can imagine shutting down something that you've given your life to for 4 years. But I think both my co-founder and I decided that maybe let's go back, let's take a short break, and let's sort of rebuild with some, you know, other product, some other company, and then maybe one day get back to building something of our own.
Okay. How did you get Sequoia on board for the fundraise? Like, they were the first investor, or you initially had angels and then went on to get Sequoia?
No, so we actually had, they were the first investors on board, and even the angels that we had on board was the same round. And so it was fairly, this thing for us, I remember the first pitch that we made was to Lightspeed. And it was a disaster, complete disaster. And we were two 25-year-olds, just very high on excitement and energy, but obviously low on knowledge in some sense of how, you know, VCs evaluate businesses and all of that. So the first pitch I remember was with Lightspeed, and it was in a hotel in Delhi. named Asan Kunj, and that's where their office used to be. And we went there, and we thought that we were prepared, but then we weren't at all. And they completely showed us the mirror in some sense.
What went wrong in that pitch? Like, just so that people can learn from your mistakes.
I think the whole, you know, projecting the market, projecting the product roadmap, I don't think we were very clear on those things. And even so, I think we were, while we were very high on the product in some sense, that this is what we want to do and this is how we see the product taking shape. But I don't think we had a very clear roadmap. We had a clear map to, let's say, you know, how we are seeing the market or how this will sort of play in the next 5 years. With internet becoming more accessible and more smarter devices coming in. So I think we lacked some sort of vision in some sense at that time. And I think we got great feedback. I still remember we were so disappointed and depressed after that pitch that you know, both me and my co-founder ended up going to Ambience Mall, which is in Delhi, again in Basant Kunj. And this was maybe 2-3 p.m. in the day, and we actually just went and had a drink because we just thought, you know, this is, what have we done? And we had the Sequoia pitch the very next day, by the way. So we were anyway so super scared and nervous that what do we do now? You know, this feels like this is, we are not prepared at all. So but then we went back. You know, we of course spent the entire night sort of trying to come up with answers to the questions that the team had asked us. And then the next day Sequoia said yes, which is also a learning for us, right? Because a lot of VCs will also look at businesses very differently with a different lens. Maybe some will give you the time to think about all the answers that you don't have on day one. So, but yeah, the next day we had Sequoia, and then talks progressed well with those guys.
How did you get an entry into like these tier one VCs? Like how did that happen? Was it just a cold email or something and they responded, or was it an introduction?
Yeah. So I'm a big believer in just cold reach outs. I think it's always personally worked for me and the companies and products that I work for. And so it's something that, you know, reach out to them on LinkedIn, etc. And I think that's how we did it even then.
Amazing. Okay. So then you walk away from PressPlay. What next?
So after PressPlay, you know, it obviously wasn't easy at all, but took some time off. I remember traveling for around 30-45 days, and just getting out of India, getting my thoughts back together. Dipinder and I were in touch to sort of get back to Zomato maybe as a possible option, so we started talking and. In fact, he mentioned the gold. The gold was more of a project at that time, going from a project to a business in some sense. And we were at, I think, 20-25,000 members, Zomato Gold members. And it just seemed like something that I wanted to do because you know, there was a business to be built there. There was a team to be built there. And there was some initial traction. So the signals were good. And I just thought, I should just get my founder attitude or mindset in some sense. And just put my head down and sort of focus on building this. So that's what ended up happening. I rejoined Zomato to lead the gold team and then ended up spending 2 years there.
Okay. And what was the like Zomato 2.0 experience like?
So very different, right? Because when I had joined them, it was a 25 member company, then going to almost whatever 200 or 300 when I left the first time. When I rejoined, it was 3,000-4,000, the company.
Right.
In whatever 20-21 countries and massive businesses, the landscape had completely changed. Online ordering was the bigger focus and dining out not so much. But the interesting thing was the DNA was still the same, a lot of companies talk about it, a lot of founders talk about it, but Zomato actually made that happen. Even with 225 people and 5,000 people, the DNA in some sense was the same. So still a very, work hard every day, get things done. Always 1% done, and these are all very gyan lagta hai sunke, but I think these are very, you know, points in culture that we've focused there, that even the founders in some sense and the leadership team focuses a lot of their time and energy in actually building all these things out. So yes, all new faces, new massive teams, but DNA is still the same.
So what is the DNA like, if you can describe it?
So I think, you know, there are 2-3 things that I sort of, now when I look back and I've learned, and I think that's the DNA in some sense also, right? It's firstly, never taking no for an answer. It's, you just don't give up, right? As in, okay, Swiggy has come and, you know, now they're obviously pura, you know, they have changed the landscape completely, and oh, will Zomato survive now? And of course it survived, you know, and in 3 years, it's neck to neck, if not more, you know? And so just never backing down. I think that is extremely key and something that I really personally try and follow. Number two that I've learned in my second stint was always be on the front foot, right? This is one of the biggest learnings that I've had. Even when you're pitching to investors or, you know, potential partners, or even when you're talking to the team, all of that in your life generally, if you're on the back foot, then the chances are that things are not going to go as per your plan.
What do you mean by being on the front foot or being on the back foot? Like, what is the difference between these two states?
So, you know, being on the front foot, basically what it means is that as a founder or as in any role in some sense, you know, you're trying to make things happen, right? As in you're trying to create something new. And it's very easy to say that, okay, no, but this, you know, this is how it's been happening, or yeah, this is how it traditionally happens, or this is how a user reacts, or this is how a partner reacts. But those if you have that attitude, you will never change the game. So being on the front foot always means that having super confidence in what you're doing. In some sense, being very, very aggressive in what you are planning and what you want to do. You know, always having 10x, 100x goals in front of you. And just, again, be super confident that you will change. You're here to change the game. And in some sense, again, with online ordering, the way that team shaped up very quickly, or even with Zomato Gold, the membership program, you know, that became a super hit very quickly. Those are not easy things to execute. But we were always on the front foot with respect to everything that, yes, this is something that can be done and has to be done. So yeah, you know, that's how at least I define it.
And then why did you quit second time around? Like, you know, did you find it as meaningful to work there as previously? Because previously you would have had a lot more influence and power than now, because, you know, smaller organization, your impact was much larger. Now, possibly your impact would have been not as large as it was earlier.
So I think influence and power are wrong ways to look at it. But I still feel that, you know, I created some impact. When I joined, we were at 25,000 Zomato Gold members. When I quit, we were at 2 million members. And even when I joined, we were about 10 of us in the gold team, and then we were about 150 of us in the gold team. So Kafi, you know, I think that is what the beauty of the role again was. Right, that even at 5,000, at a company where there are 5,000 people, and yes, there are processes, and it's not what it used to be in 2011, but still you have that independence and you have that freedom to run a business the way you want, to grow the business the way you want, and you know, take decisions very, very quickly. There is no red tape, is nothing, right? As in, this needs to be done, agle ghante mein you take a call and you get it done. And so yeah, so again, I would actually say that both were great stints. The first stint was more 0 to 1. The second stint was actually building a business and seeing it, you know, at a slight scale. So that's why I actually value both experiences equally.
As head of Zomato Gold, what was like your focus areas? Like, were you focusing more on onboarding more restaurant partners, or were you also looking at like the digital marketing spend to acquire more customers who signed up for it? Or, you know, like, what were the things that you focused on to make it reach the scale which it did?
So everything. So in some sense, I was a CEO of the business. So everything, demand, supply, marketing, you know, right from chat support, customer support, everything was, the ball used to stop at me in some sense. And I enjoyed every bit of it, right? Even chatting with members on the app, or onboarding new partners in, let's say, Beirut or, you know, Melbourne, or launching in every, we launched in 9-10 countries outside India. And so every aspect of the business, we used to look at, and a lot of new learnings, a lot of this thing. But yeah, that's how at least the team was. So Zomato, at least at that time, you know, now maybe things have changed in the last 6 months, given COVID, et cetera, as well. But a very interesting thing that I saw and learned from was that every business, every vertical was actually an independent business. So Zomato Gold would have its own marketing team, its own hiring team, its own customer support team. So similarly with, let's say, the other businesses that Zomato had.
Right.
So what it helped was that it enabled us to move very, very quickly. So that's how we used to run the teams there.
Overall, what percentage of Zomato's revenue comes from outside India?
So again, numbers can't get into so much. I think they publish a very, very sort of detailed, you know, sort of an annual report every year. And I think whatever the team is comfortable disclosing, it's all there. But it's pretty significant. Online ordering, etc., obviously is big in India. But the dining out business is pretty big in all the international countries as well.
So then, you know, around like early this year, you decided to move out. What was the reason behind that?
So reason was, let me actually tell you a story. So I at Pressplay, you know, at my first startup, so Sequoia used to have these founder meetups, right? So So we went to Goa, and all these Sequoia founders were there. And of course, we were in awe of all of them in some sense. So I remember this conversation that I had with one founder, and he said ki, look, kuch baat ho rahi thi about second time founders and all of that, of coming back and building. And he mentioned a very interesting line, which I still remember. And he said ki, second time founders are always a rare lot. But what ends up happening is that 2-3 saal baad na, you only remember the good things of your journey. So the bad things, the struggle, etc., you tend to, memory sort of fades. But only the good things that, you were building and you were at it and you were, building your own team, all of that, your own vision. So yahi sab yaad rehta hai by the end of it. So I think mere saath bhi na yahi hua ki after 2 years, I think I only remembered the good things, and I thought ki I really want to go back. I really miss that. And I was also, not as young as I was the first time. I was getting older, and I thought ki, the traditional sense ki maybe responsibilities will keep on increasing, and maybe this is the right time to sort of again jump back into building something of my own. So it was a very, it was not as quick a decision as it was the last time, but is baar bhi kaafi jaldi ho gaya. I took a couple of weeks off before I resigned to sort of think through what I want to do. And those couple of weeks, I just spent time on Leap and the idea that was just taking shape at that time. And I really enjoyed it. I thought ki, my productivity levels were 1000x of what they used to be, interest levels, all of that. And I thought, ki, theek hai, at the end of those 2 weeks, I was very clear. And I thought, let's do this again.
So what was the idea that came to you?
So idea, the first shape and form was that how we professional networks were not adding any value. So LinkedIn for us in India typically means ki jo bhi, connection requests aa rahe hain, sabko add karte raho, and people boast about having 20,000, 30,000 connections on LinkedIn. But how is that helping? So I'll tell you a typical work LinkedIn day for me used to be 15-20 messages on, that DM jo inmails unke hote hain, ki saying ki mera khana nahi aaya hai, khana late ho gaya hai.
Oh shit.
I just used to think, what is happening, right? And so that's how it all started in some sense. And I kept thinking ki there has to be a better professional network, a more community-led professional network, and it has to be maybe paid. It has to be optimized for real things in some sense, and not just ki, oh, I have 20,000 connections. That doesn't mean anything. So that was the initial idea, that it has to focus on professional development, and let's build something there. And in fact, my co-founder was also part of the Goal team. She was, in fact, the first person in the Goal team at Zomato. And I used to keep discussing all of these. She used to sit across just in front of me, and I used to keep discussing these ideas with her. And this sort of stuck with both of us. And then we started working more and more and thinking more about this. And then it sort of transformed into what it is today.
Why did you decide to make it a woman-only network?
So I'll tell you 2-3 reasons, right? One is that, so we were doing a lot of primary research. Now this is October, November last year. And the idea, it was just an idea in some sense, ki haan, aisa kuch hona chahiye. But then we started talking to a lot of people, even our first degree network and second degree network, all of them. And we just started collecting some feedback saying, ki, what is it that you look for in a professional network? That's a simple question. And there were, of course, some usual answers that came, network and learning and all of these things. But there was one thing that really stood out, that the passion with which women were giving these answers was very different with how men were sort of approaching this question. Interesting example, for example, we had this question we had a question there that who's your role model? And we noticed that males, like men, had very varied answers, right? Even from, let's say, Virat Kohli to maybe a Bollywood actor to a politician to a lot of industries in some sense were represented.
Entrepreneurs.
Yeah, for the founders, everyone. But for women, 90% of the women, the answer was Indira Nooyi only. And that's when we realized ki, there are actually so few even women role model, female role models in some sense. And then we started reading more about that, why is it like this, and why is there, we read some reports, McKinsey reports and all of that at that time, that the workforce, let's say out of 100, it's 52% males and 48% females, which is pretty strong.
Right, yeah.
But in leadership, that number goes down for 20% or maybe even lower for females. So there was a big thing we realized that drop-offs was happening at every level. And we thought that maybe, that's something that we are passionate about. And we were also very clear on day one that, yes, while we want to build a massively profitable and global business and all of that, but we also want to do something that we are passionate about. So, and this seemed like a good, in some sense, you know, problem to solve, if I can just call it that, or some, you know, problem to work on. And that's when we thought that, you know, let's start by opening memberships for women and let's see how it goes. So that's how it all started.
You know, how is Leap Club different from LinkedIn? Like, what are the features of the product, if I can use that term?
So, you know, difference today is that while you have a lot of, like, we also have a feed and we also have tools where you can reach out to other people and connect to them in a much more sort of intimate way. But ultimately, what we're doing today is that we are benefits first today. What that means is that Leap is firstly, it's only paid. So you have to pay to become a member.
What is the pricing like?
So pricing, again, it's, you know, we charge close to 30,000 rupees a year. You know, that's the amount. So it's a pretty highly priced membership. And then you have your option to pay monthly and, you know, different sort of permutations and combinations. But it's, yeah, it's paid. And as I said, we are benefits first, right? What happens is that today you're paying for the benefits that you get. So we are really sort of focusing on building a better network for you. We are very focused on your mental wellness, for example. So every Leap member gets access to 10 therapy sessions. And we feel that, you know, mental wellness plays a big part in your professional growth. So for example, that we also felt that executive coaching can really transform your career. You know, in the US and in other sort of more developed countries, coaching is a very normal concept that people adapt to in some sense or start using at a very early stage in your career.
Right.
In India, how it happens is that it's usually been reserved for the CXOs and the VPs, or, you know, in some sense, the top level. And we thought that this has to change, because why not make coaching available to people in mid-management, or, you know, people who are starting out their careers, who can actually, you know, this can change their careers in some sense. So you get access to an exec coach today on our platform. We focus a lot on, you know, your learning.
So the cost of coaching is bundled into the membership price.
Yeah, everything is bundled into the membership price. And so you get access to, you know, something that we call as Academy, and you get access to a lot of curated content. You get access to, you know, a lot of these masterclasses and huddles that we, you know, workshops that we keep doing. So we are just trying to focus on everything possible that will help you grow in your professional life, or you know, will help you live your best professional life.
So in a way, if I could like give an analogy, so the way one would subscribe to a fitness club, the same way one would subscribe to Leap Club for professional growth.
Yeah, I just hope that we end up using Leap much more than we end up using fitness apps.
Right.
But yeah, in some sense, you know, just sort of a very holistic approach to your professional development.
And what are the kind of people who are willing to pay this kind of amount? Like, what do you see in terms of your member profile?
So, you know, very interesting, because when we started the company, we thought that typically, 2600 rupees a month. So it's not a cheap membership in some sense.
Right.
And maybe you have to earn a certain amount in a month to be comfortable with this, for paying this. And we were a new product. We had no credibility in some sense. So we initially started reaching out to people who were in, you know, between 6 to 12 years of work experience. So, you know, we thought that maybe you're earning maybe 50,000 to a lakh a month. And, you know, this is something that you could try. So that was our first TG in some sense. But very soon we realized that professional development and growth is actually, you know, whatever level that you are, you always aspire to go to the next level. And so today we have a lot of young leaders, you know, we call them young leaders on the platform, who come with, let's say, 0 to 5 years of experience, who are just starting out their careers. We have, and so that's 20%, I would say, and that's by design. So we control that a bit. Then we have 20% who are, you know, internally we call them generals. So that's the word that we use. And these are women who've been, you know, 18, 20 years of work experience, who've been there, done that, at the top of their game, but again, very interested in growing. So 20% is that. And then the 60% is the what I mentioned, the 6 to 12. So that's how it is today. But they come from all industries, you know, all your, while there, a lot of your top companies are represented. But we have a lot of founders. We have a lot of professionals, lawyers, CAs, a lot of people who, you know, women who now want to get back to work, or maybe after a maternity break or after some other break. So it's a great mix.
And what are like some of the success stories you've seen so far in terms of like real world impact on the members? If you have any anecdotes.
Yeah, so we are a very young company, by the way. We only opened memberships on the 1st of May.
Oh, wow.
But already the energy and the impact in some sense we are seeing is pretty phenomenal. We have something called a super, we call it super connections, where members can actually reach out to other members for meetings. And you know, I think in the last 2 months we have had now 250 plus super connections happen on the platform. And there are very, very interesting stories that are coming out of these meetings. You know, people have met potential co-founders, people are meeting potential investors. And the beauty is that, and you might say that, oh, ye to LinkedIn pe bhi ho sakta hai and all of that. But, you know, curation, there's no curation on LinkedIn. Now, today we are close to now 300 members. And these are 300 top members. And the feeling of a community-driven network is very evident. If I send an email to someone on LinkedIn, it might not get replied to. But here we see that 95% of the messages get a reply and the meetings actually happen. So, you know, the whole community is taking shape. So those are those meetings are enabling a lot of good stories to come out. Coaching is something that a lot of our members are, you know, they're experiencing for the first time. And now there is so much demand for actually introducing many, many more modules of coaching. And in fact, we'll do that next month. So you know, therapy, again, I think in the last 2 months, we've hosted 200 plus sessions. And given COVID and its impact and all of that, I feel I think it was the right thing to do as well. So again, for every benefit, we've actually seen the usage happening. We've seen the impact happen. So yeah, so far so good.
And is this funded, is it bootstrapped as of now?
So it's funded. We actually raised a seed sort of around pre-launch in March. So yeah.
Like with institutional investors or angels?
So mix of both. So we have actually a very good set of founders. So we have, for example, Titan Capital, which is Kunal, the Snapdeal founders, Kunal and Rohit. So they are a part. Sequoia Scouts program. So they have invested some money. And
what is the Scouts program?
So I think their successful founders, they can actually, it's a very interesting program. I think the successful founders, portfolio founders, they can actually choose to invest some of the money. So we have a founder there who invested in us. We have Whiteboard Capital, which is a Sandeep Tandon's fund, who's the founder of FreeCharge. And it's a very good mix of institutional investors and angels.
And this was again like cold emails or like what?
So a few were actually cold emails. I remember, for example, we have a firm called First Check, and very, very interesting what they're doing. They've also gotten a cohort of founders, and they invest money along with them. So
right.
There, I remember I had just sort of sent a cold email, and we ended up connecting. And even with Artha, which is another one of the institutional investors, it was just a cold reach out. So yeah, so I have followed my principles of being on the front foot there as well.
Right, got it. Okay, amazing. So how big do you see this becoming in like a 1 year span by the end of, let's say, 31st March 2021? What do you estimate will your Leap Club look like?
So again, you know, very interesting question, because I can answer that in two ways. One is I can answer that, okay, this is how we want to be at 5,000 members, for example, or 10,000 members. Or I can say that, okay, you know, we want our members to win. And that is what we're focusing on. You asked me, are you guys making any real impact? And that's what we want to focus on.
Right.
So what we've decided is that, you know, we're going to take it a bit slow, right? This is something new for us that we're also doing. And at the end of first year, let's say if we're at 1,500 members, then I think that'd be a good number. We have a pretty strong wait list, by the way. We have 5,000 women who are on the wait list today and very strong.
Why such a big wait list? I mean, why not let them in?
Because again, you know, firstly bandwidth, because we were just three of us till around a couple of months back. Today we are 13, 14 of us in the team, and we are expanding our onboarding team as well, all of that. But also we want to make sure we are very comfortable running a sales process, right? If we want to start onboarding more members, I think we'll be very comfortable doing that. But the harder part here is to actually make sure that each and every member is winning. So we want to focus on that and take things a bit slow. So I think around 1,500 members are making sure that all, you know, each one of them is winning. That's the goal.
That's amazing. So what do you see as like a more long-term vision, you know, like your big, hairy, audacious goal, so to say, like say 10 years or 15 years down the line?
You know, our goal in some sense is that we have to disrupt LinkedIn. You know, that is where we started. And, you know, we've taken a slightly different approach. But we have to disrupt. We have to be the number one professional network in the world. The beauty is that we're already taking, as I mentioned, that the community is already taking shape. There is a lot of content being generated even on our platform. So we also have a feed, and we're just going to introduce more and more tools and features in the coming months. So all of that, everything that LinkedIn does in a spammy and noisy way in some sense, so we want to do that for a very private paid community, small community. But you know, jobs down the line or endorsements or better ways to connect, all of that will hopefully come. But that's the big goal.
So given that you will keep it only for women, I mean, you know, won't it be somewhat restrictive to the growth? Because there is value in getting men into the network because it opens up more connections, like you gave examples of people finding investors. Now, today, most of the people in the investment profession are men, you know, so wouldn't there be like a cap or a constraint on growth by virtue of it being women only?
Yeah, so a very good question, and something that we also debate about quite a bit internally. And so again, you have to understand that firstly, we are not alienating men. Our members today will be the first ones to tell you that if we want to bring about a real change, then men have to be involved, right?
Right.
And so we are very open to sort of introduce them to a lot of our masterclasses, for example, or workshops are held by men, are hosted by men. And we are very open to, you know, working with them in the future. Right now, the idea is that we started with women because, you know, we just felt that this is something that we are more passionate about. And you know, 2 years down the line, I'm sure that we will find ways to involve men on the platform as well.
Cool. And so one final question. So entrepreneurs are essentially, you know, always driven by learning new things. And what is it that's currently driving you, something that you're currently seeking to learn as a person?
Okay. So I see, again, the learning that has been for me in the last 6 months is actually revolves a lot around Leap and the problems that exist and all of that. But actually, let me sort of give you a counter view to your question. I am actually not a person who wants to say, oh, meko ye seekhna hai, meko, I want to learn something new and I want to do this. I am actually the opposite in some sense. So I know that I have maybe a few strong points, and I actually like being around those strong points. And I want to learn, for example, so many people early in their careers, they will come and say that, okay, now you want to transition to product management because, you know, that just sounds fancy at that time. And I just, you know, the answer that I give to them is that if you're good at cricket, then keep practicing that. If you're a good bowler, don't come and say that, okay, now I want to start playing football.
Right, right.
And I, of course, you know, read quite a bit, and I hear a lot of podcasts. Twitter is a great source of knowledge for me. But as I said, learning is an everyday process. And yes, you want to be a better leader and you want to maybe, you know, become better at what you do. But ultimately, I like staying around my strong points.
Beyond Campus is a production of ThePodium.in, powered by Career Launcher. If you like this show, then we are sure that you will love our other shows on subjects like entrepreneurship, marketing, books, and drama. Check out ThePodium.in for a complete list of all our shows.